for those of you who have been here, who haven't been here, it doesn't matter. I'm going to do a brief recap. We've been talking about this book. It's called the Bible. And we've been referring to it as a little free library. You know, like those things that you see on the corner of the street, and you know, you get the books in there. There's all different kinds. Are those my notes? Okay, can I have that?
Wow!
Huh. It was gonna get. We were gonna be here for a really long time. Thanks, Joy. So we've been talking about the Bible as this like small library of different books. And just like any library you walk into, there are different genres of writing. Different genres is just a way of saying types. Like, just like there's different types of movies, there's different kinds of books, right? Written by different people, in different contexts, for different reasons. And so far, we've talked about narrative. We talked about Old Testament narrative, and how to understand those stories. We've talked about New Testament narrative, and specifically where we see that is in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And then last week, Joy got to talk about poetry, which was lovely. And now I get to talk about law, which is another way of saying prose. There's different kinds of prose. Think of prose as like essays, news articles, laws. Okay. So, when was the last time you read the laws in the Bible? For how many of you are they troubling? For how many of you are they just confusing? Outdated? Yeah, there you go, Michael. Thank you, Michael. There's honesty over there. All right. So, what we're doing today is we're going to talk about what we're referring to when we say the law. Okay, that's the first thing we're going to do. We're going to talk about what it was for, what it was not for, and why does it matter? Or does it matter? Okay. So I want to talk to you first about this game. Anybody ever played this game? It's okay if you haven't played Ticket to Ride. But I want to tell you about a brief story. There's a lot you can learn about a person by playing a game with them. True? It's a window. Sometimes it's a wide open window to their personality. Have they all heard this story? Because I've probably told it. This is a story about Joy and a game called Ticket to Ride. Joy's back there.
She didn't know that I was going to use this. She didn't know I was going to use this as an illustration. And so this morning I said, "Hey, Joy, tell me about that time we played Ticket to Ride. What actually went wrong?" And let me tell you something. She relived it as though it had just happened. Okay? All right. So Ticket to Ride is a game where you are provided with these little plastic trains. Each person has a different color of trains, and your goal is to connect like one destination to another. And some routes are longer than others. Some you can connect really quickly with like three trains. Others, it's like multiple trains, right? If you don't finish a route, you only get partial points for that route. But if you finish a whole route, you get a maximum amount of points. Yeah, you get a lot of points. Finishing a route is the key. All right. We've never played this game before when we are invited over to a couple's house for dinner and a game. Doesn't that sound nice? Dinner and a game? These were people that we knew pretty well, but not as well as we should have for playing Ticket to Ride and what would later transpire. So, anyway, we're playing along. We've been playing for a long time. And then suddenly, Joy plays her last train. And when I said this morning, so what happened that was wrong? She said, "Well, I thought when I played my last train that I was going to be allowed to use some other token, like a bean or a penny or a slip of paper to continue putting trains on the board." For those of you who have played Ticket to Ride, is that a rule in the game? What happens when you play your last train? Gwen knows. Short story, you lose. Not necessarily, but that is exactly, yeah. Yeah. Gwen wins, yeah. So Joy played her last train thinking, okay, she's strategized the whole game on how she's going to win the most amount of points, and she plays her last train thinking, "I'm going to get to play more trains," and she doesn't get to. And do you know what happens as a result of that? She goes from being the top point getter in the game to being last. And you would have thought, we had, I don't know, pick something really, really terrible had happened. She lost her mind over that. And what I mean is, by lost her mind, is she could not let it go. Right? At first she's like, what? Well, I didn't know that was a rule. So we should therefore play by the rule that I think, you know, it was in play the whole time. Because I strategized this whole game based upon these rules, and that's what I thought you were doing too. We're all playing by those rules. Yep. Turns out,
he was a lawyer,
and that is exactly right. He was a lawyer, he knew the rules, and he was like, if you don't know it, sorry about you, you didn't know it. She didn't know the rules, and he was merciless. He was like, well, too bad. You lose. And he won. These laws that we're going to learn about today are not, they're not in place in order to win. That's not why they were given. They were not given so that you could win, or so that the people of Israel that they were given to could win. They were given so that there was an expectation of conduct for all the parties involved. Just like rules of a game. We're all playing by the same rules, so you can anticipate that when I lay my final train, that sets in motion this set of rules. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? It sets an expectation. The law set an expectation. So, let's start with our first question here. Where is the law in the Bible? What are we even referring to when we say law? Anybody? Old Testament. We know it's in the Old Testament, so that's about, you know, that's this much. That's this much down on the end here. Where in there is it? It's in the first five books. That's right. Specifically, you can read all of Genesis, and then you're going to get halfway into the book of Exodus, and that's when you're going to start bumping into some weird stuff like what Beth read for us today. Right? So we're referring to Matthew. We're referring to Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. That is where you find the law in the Old Testament. But the question really here is, what was it for? Why was it given? What was it not for? And why does it matter? So, what was it for? Anybody in the room, tell me, this is how we do Bible study on Wednesday nights. On Wednesday nights, we say, shout out anything that you've ever heard, whether you agree with it or not, whether you think it's true or not, anything you've ever heard about the law. Why was it? What was it for? What was the law for? So Gwen is saying to set them apart from everybody around them. Sometimes to keep them safe. In what way?
There were things that, like, you could get trichinosis from eating pork.
Yeah, so, like, she used the word trichinosis. You could get trichinosis from eating pork. And so there were some food laws involved, like what to eat and what not to eat. What else have you heard? Protection from?
Protect people from each other.
To protect people from each other. So it was like a social order, a way to conduct yourselves. What else have you heard?
Show it couldn't be done.
To show that it couldn't be done. Okay. What else?
It was a roadmap.
It was a roadmap?
Yeah, there's stuff about slavery too.
Yeah, but there's stuff about slavery in there too. So thanks, Zach. Thanks for that. There's stuff in there that's hard. What else?
To remain holy with God's people.
Okay, so to remain holy with God's people. No one has said anything about the sacrificial system.
To
atone for sins. That's the other thing that we hear about, right? That this is how you make peace with God. This is how you placate God and make God okay with you, right? So we have all these different ideas about what was the law for? What was it actually for? What was it not for? And why does it matter? Okay, so I want to just cut to the chase here. We might not actually be here for that long, honestly. The purpose of the laws, specifically, were to gender relationship with
Yahweh. So you have this God who has said, I want to be in relationship with you. I want to have actual meaningful contact with you. Not just be above you, but be in relationship to you. And the way that Yahweh wanted to do that was by creating a covenant with these people. Now, the most familiar covenant that you know of probably is a marriage covenant. And marriage covenants have in mind certain conduct between the two parties, right? You're going to behave like this. I'm going to behave like this. And whatever it is, we're going to do that together, right? Not at one another, but with each other. That's the idea. And specifically, the purpose of the laws was to create predictable behavior between the parties. The law said, this is how you should expect one another to behave, and this is how you can expect God to behave. Right? So not just pernicious, I do whatever I want kind of God. Can we close that curtain right there? But a God whose behavior we are able to predict. So when you think about the Old Testament, this is the Old Testament. For those of you who've been here the last couple of weeks, we've had several maps go up that don't have anything on them. So this is the Old Testament. You see it? And here's the beginning of it. Here's the middle of it. Here's the end of it. And this all together is the Hebrew Bible or the Old Testament. Do you see it? It's right there. Okay. The heart of the Old Testament is this covenant that's made at Mount Sinai. Now, this is an exchange that happens between God and the people of Israel. These are the two main characters of the Old Testament. God has a conversation with the people of Israel where he is setting up the expectations of the relationship. You do this. You can expect this from me, and I should expect this from you, just like a marriage covenant. That can be found, like I said before, in the first five books of the Bible. That's a lot of material. It's a lot of material. But just like with any relationship, Joy and I have referred to this before, the Gottman Institute is a great resource for relationship and marriage counseling and direction, guidance. And they've been doing research for decades on what makes a healthy relationship. And so they've created this little house. You may not be able to see all the words very well, but the two walls that hold up any healthy relationship, any committed relationship, are trust and commitment. Trust and commitment. Now, when we're talking about the covenant that God set up with the people of Israel, God has built in on his side trust and commitment. This is what you can expect from me. You can trust that I will behave in these predictably good ways. And the hope was that the other party would do the same. But if you read the whole Old Testament, what do we find? They don't do that. Yeah, that's John said, we don't do that. We don't do that either. It's fun to go read about the Israelites because you're like, look at them, they're blowing it. And, you know, you can point at somebody else and their faults and failures. And really, they're just an example of all of us trying to keep this commitment, trying to behave in the ways that they're supposed to, trying to keep the rules. So, what kinds of rules are there? There are do and do not laws. Do and do not laws. We've read some of them already, but I want to read you this one. It's from Leviticus 19, 9 through 14. If you can see it, you can read along with me. When you reap the harvest of your land, do not reap to the very edges of your field or gather the gleanings of your harvest. Do not go over your vineyard a second time or pick up the grapes that have fallen. Leave them for the poor and the foreigner. I am the Lord your God. Do not steal. Do not lie. Do not deceive one another. Do not swear falsely by my name and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Do not defraud or rob your neighbor. Do not hold back the wages of a hired worker overnight. Wouldn't that be great? if we still did that. Do not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block in front of the blind. Fear your God. I am the Lord. These are the examples of do and do not laws. Do and do not laws are pretty, they're specific in a way, but they're also general enough that they might cover several different instances of this, right? Don't steal. Well, can I steal at night? Don't steal. Can I steal during the day? Don't steal. Can I steal if I really, really need it? Don't steal. Do not steal. Right? So they're general in a sense. Do not laws. One of the do not laws that we came across that I can't anytime. So some people when they get married, they will lay out a Bible and they're like, you can highlight one of your favorite passages. This is the one I always highlight. Do not cook a young goat in its mother's milk. That's the one I always highlight. I mean, I highlight some other ones, but I make sure that that one gets highlighted because you need to know that's in there. So, turns out this is a very contested, up for grabs piece of scripture. Even the rabbis debate the meaning of it. Right? So there are some do and do not laws that we read and we're like, I don't get it. And that's fine. There's some people, nobody gets it. Right? There's some things that are so contextualized and so specific to that time period, you're not going to get it. Right? But you could almost bank on the fact that if you come across a weirdy law like this, and you will come across weirdy laws. If you come across a weirdy law, you can almost count on it being something cultural that's tied to the cultures of the people around the Israelites at that time, that probably had some superstition involved in it to placate a different god. Right? So if you see something like that, you can almost bet that it has something to do with the surrounding culture worshiping their God in a different way. So this is why the Abraham and Isaac thing that happens, where Abraham is told to take Isaac, his son, up to sacrifice him. And readers during that time would have been like, okay, we do that. People do that to placate God. But this God was like, no, we don't. That is a do not thing. Do we sacrifice our children? No, we do not. So Yahweh is setting up expectations for conduct and behavior, and sometimes they seem confusing, and that's okay. You can dig around on the internet if you want to and get more confused. You can always come and ask me, and I'll be like, I don't know. So, you know, we can be equally confused together. Okay, so the other types of law is called case-by-case laws. Case-by-case laws. So the example that I have here is from Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 15, verses 12 through 17. If any of your people, and this is what Zach was talking about a second ago. If any of your people, Hebrew men or women, sell themselves to you as slaves and serve you 6 years, then in the seventh year, you must let them go free. This was a revolutionary idea. This is a revolutionary idea in the time period to say, in the seventh year, you can go. If you were indebted to me for any kind of reason, if we had had an agreement and you were working for me, on the seventh year, you're free. And when you release them, do not send them away empty-handed. Supply them liberally from your flock, your threshing floor, and your wine press. Give to them as the Lord your God has blessed you. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. That is why I give you this command today. Yahweh is saying, treat them the way that I treated you. Mimic it. Model it. Behave in the way that I behaved. Okay, we're continuing on here. But if your servant says to you, I do not want to leave you because he loves you and your family and is well off with you, then take an awl and push it through his earlobe into the door and he will become your servant for life. Do the same for your female servant. Do we still do that stuff? No, we do not. And why is that? Kevin said, because it's wrong. How did you, huh?
Because Jesus came.
Because Jesus. What a great answer. But let's get specific. So we have these do and do not laws that are kind of general. They are applied to all these different circumstances. And then we have these case-by-case laws that are if-then. Hang on, Daryl. I'll get you after. Okay. We have if-then laws. So they're very specific. If this happens, then here's the next course of action. And that's probably because they had those experiences. There's a thing now called case law. Right? Case law, when used in a court of law, is like, hey, in so-and-so versus so-and-so, the judge ruled such-and-such. Doesn't that clear everything up for you? But case law is like, in this specific instance over here that feels really similar to the one we're in now, the judge ruled this way. And so we should do something similar in this situation. So, and now you've opened a law school. All right. So, no, you haven't. Okay. All right. So, this is this is the covenant at Mount Sinai. It's snowy on Sinai. This is the covenant at Mount Sinai. And this appears in Genesis again. It appears in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Really, it's Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. All those books that you read all the time. That's where the covenant at Mount Sinai happens. And like I said before, this is this very important conversation that Yahweh is having with the people of Israel, where expectations are being set for relationship. This is how we conduct each other. This is what you can expect from me and what I should be able to expect from you. It's the rules of the game, right? So that you don't get to the end and go, what the heck, man? I don't know that one. This is so lame. I'm never playing again. All right, you see that right there? Covenant at Mount Sinai. Okay, so moving on. Uh-oh. All right. The heart of the covenant at Mount Sinai is these two verses. Anybody know them off the top of their head? Deuteronomy 6:5 and Leviticus 19:18. Now, I want to confess to you something. The scripture that Beth was supposed to read today was Leviticus 19:18, not 19:19. But I just loved so much what was going on in 19:19 that I was like, I'm leaving it. I don't want to tell her that it's actually 19:18. Anybody know what these are off of the top of your head? Deuteronomy 6:5 and Leviticus 19:18. You know that scripture that you hid away in your heart so long ago? Shema. Okay, so Deuteronomy 6:5 and following starts with, well, actually, I think it's 4. I think it's 4 through 6. The Lord our God, the Lord is one, is how it starts. But then it follows up with something that's really familiar. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength. What about this one? What's this one? Anybody know Leviticus 19:18 off the top of your head? Okay. Let's see. What do we got? Okay, well, there's 6:5. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and all your strength. Sold. That's how you spell it. Sold. Okay, Leviticus 19:18. You ready? Oh. The first part might not feel familiar, but this part will. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. Familiar? Sorta? Yeah? So, we have this law that's existed for several generations among this specific people group, the Israelites. And they have come to believe that by abiding by this law, that is how they make themselves right with God. If I can keep all of the commandments, if I can do all the things just so, stand on one foot, hold my hand in just such a way, if I tithe in just the right way, God will be okay with me. And then Jesus shows up. And in Matthew 5... Ooh, if you could have been a fly on the wall for what happened. It's a different mount. So instead of Mount Sinai, it's a Sermon on the Mount. And it's a different little mountain. And this time, Jesus is the one doing the talking. And Jesus starts to say things like this. Do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, until heaven and earth pass away, not an iota, not a dot will pass from the law until all is accomplished. And then he goes on by saying things like this: you have heard that it was said to those of old. It's all this stuff we've been talking about. You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. And people are like, check, done it. I've done that one, I've done that one, I've done that one, I've done that one. They're keeping the rules. But Jesus restates it and says, but I say to you, everyone who's angry with his brother, he takes it deeper, right? He takes it to the heart of what was actually intended. Jesus sums it up when he's asked, what's the greatest law? Doesn't this make so much more sense? When you're hearing the word law now in the New Testament, when you're hearing it in the Gospels, this was what they were thinking of, this covenant in Sinai. And here's what I would encourage you to do. Go read it. Go read all of the different things that they were expected to do, or that they thought they were expected to do. Jesus sums up the law by quoting two early laws. Deuteronomy 6:5, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then Leviticus 19:18, love your neighbor as yourself. And so what we learn is that the bedrock of the law was love. The foundation of the law was love. And you're like, well, what about that boiling the goat in its mother's milk? And what about the da-da-da? The purpose, the underlying motivation, was this committed and trusting relationship built upon love. It's hard to think of laws as loving, but, I have a toddler. And we're at that point where we're like, do not! Or do, you know. And there's a reason for that. Because we can see it. And the reason that we do that, it's not arbitrary. It's not just because. It's because we love her. We want her to be safe. We want her to be healthy. And the more that we follow our own rules, so let me tell you something here. She will mimic what I do. Right? She will mimic what I do. So I can say all day long, do and do not. But whenever I squeeze lighter fluid onto the fire, and then she tries to go get the bottle, I'm like, no, don't do that, don't do that. We don't do that. And she was like, well, yes, we do. That happened yesterday. I was doing fire stuff, and I thought she wasn't looking, and I was like, I'm just going to squeeze some lighter fluid on there and kind of get this thing going, all the wood's a little wet, you know? And then she saw me. And so she kept going over to get the bottle of lighter fluid. And I kept having to say, no, we don't do that. You don't do that. We should not be doing that. I shouldn't be doing that either. So it's all a demonstration. The way that we conduct ourselves is a reflection of the way that God conducts God's self. This is why we behave in these ways. This is why we love, because this is how God is. This is why we forgive. This is why we tame our anger. This is why we value mercy above sacrifice, right? Because this is how God behaves. This is what God is like. So, helpful tips for reading the Old Testament laws. If it is reiterated by Jesus, is for you. So if you see the laws in the Old Testament and you're like, I don't know. Those were written for a specific people, a specific time and place. If it is reiterated by Jesus, it's for you. And more often what you're going to find is that it's nuanced by Jesus. It's taken by Jesus and created anew, because Jesus came to make a new covenant, right? So, if you want to see where a lot of the laws are reiterated, it's Matthew chapters 5 through 7 in the Sermon on the Mount. I talk about the Sermon on the Mount a lot because it sums up a lot of what Jesus thinks and believes. So the most helpful tip that you can remember when you're reading the Old Testament laws, because I know you guys are just scratching to get out of here and go grab your Bible and sit down with lunch and some law, remember that the purpose of the law was to encourage loving relationship with God and with one another. That's why it was given. To encourage loving relationship with God and with one another. The memory verse that we have for this series is from Romans 15:4. If you haven't already grabbed a little card, they're out here where you got your name tag and bulletin and all that stuff. Romans 15:4 says, for whatever was written in earlier times. And the person who's writing this is thinking of the Hebrew Bible, by the way. The Old Testament. For whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and the encouragement of the scriptures, we might have hope. This is why we're going through the genres, right? So that we can learn why and how these things are helpful to us, how they reshape the way that we think about God and one another. So,